It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It is April 29th. I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Anderson Emerald.
And this week in track and field, it was another one where it just felt like there was action taking place all over the world. We had the Shanghai Diamond League out in China. We had a squad from Sidious Mag at the Penn Relays covering all of the action there. And then from there, it's just sort of like, all right, I got a results page open on my phone for the Drake Relays. Somehow I had to watch, what was it, the East Coast Relays taking place in Florida, because that's where Marcel Jacobs, Trayvon Bermel, Andre DeGrasse were running. You got the Bermuda Grand Prix that was taking place on Sunday. It just feels like we were being pulled in so many different directions every single weekend.
It's like, yeah, it's hard to keep up. And it's weird because we're still in April, but it's true. I think athletes are just like breaking things off. They're either staying close to home or, yeah, they're getting the opportunities to travel overseas a little bit. And I mean, it's good. Things are starting to warm up. I think at a base level, I just like to see the athletes competing. This is an Olympic year. This is big. So let's like see everyone on the track. So I can't complain too much despite having to jump around so many places.
All right. So full disclosure for the listeners as to why me and Kyle and Max Instagram stories were coming from Puerto Rico this weekend as opposed to Philadelphia or Shanghai or any of these other meets. It was my bachelor party weekend. And so I decided that, you know, I'm getting married in September. I got to find a weekend at some point in the calendar year to do my bachelor party. And, you know, this was, we picked that particular weekend because it worked for a majority of the people there. I didn't realize at the time that it was Penn Relays weekend. We partnered with On to hype it up, but On was so gracious to be like, you know, you guys, you know, we just love Sidious in general, which is the beauty of it. It doesn't have to be me and Kyle. We decided to send our squad of Anderson, Xavier Gallo, Lucas Osborne, Johnny Zhang. That was the crew holding it down at Penn Relays while, Kyle, me, and Mac, and a bunch of my other, you know, friends who are not in the track and field space, were at the Bacardi Rum Factory Tour and on a boat for a little bit. But I tried my best to unplug. Anderson, the first thing you told me, was like, you did not really unplug.
I was about to say, you tried, but like, barely. No, but you did get time off. But I mean, I think you sent a video of you like at the bar or something, and like we're of course like going through Penn and all that. But I'm glad that you at least took at least some good time to just like get away and just like enjoy your bachelor party, man.
We tried. You know, I went to one of the bars and I asked them to put the Penn Relays on TV, and they said we don't have a FloTrack subscription. All right, but Anderson, overall, how were the vibes this weekend out at Penn? Because, you know, kind of as we've looked at the meet over the years, right, you know, you and I are both familiar with going back to our high school days. Yeah. And, you know, it is just an electrifying atmosphere. I did see someone tweet out a video of just like, how do we get this replicated, you know, everywhere, basically, where it's like on Saturday especially is the day where, you know, 20,000 to 30,000. I don't know what the final attendance number was. Mm-hmm. Mostly Jamaican Caribbean fans are coming out to cheer on the Jamaican teams. And it just feels like if you're a college athlete, you don't even get this kind of atmosphere at the NCAA championships.
No. Yeah. This is a very different atmosphere that you don't get many places. And I think especially this year at Penn, where the weather was really good. Penn is notorious for some really bad weather, but it seems like year after year, Penn is kind of getting back to what it used to be, I guess, like pre-COVID in a sense. And I think On did a very good job of like putting a lot of, you know, things together Like you noted, the Jamaican fans from literally from Thursday to Saturday, they were on fire. And you see them cheering for not only, of course, the top Jamaican schools that are competing, but for all the other schools. They just love. I remember, I think during the after the 4x mile, they were hyping up Villanova as they were like walking all around the track. So yeah, I really like the energy at Penn this year, and it really showed out in some of these performances that we saw on the track, which is good.
Because no matter what, just sort of like when you've got, over 120 plus years of history, holding up that wheel and collecting one of the watches, like it means more. And it's not appreciated enough, just sort of sometimes why some of these schools do go so hard. I'm thinking in particular like Villanova every single year just seems to rack up the Penn Relays titles. And it's just sort of like, well, no, this is like tradition. This is one of the big meets that matters in America. So for you, I guess to sum up the weekend at Penn Relays, what were your top four moments of the weekend? Pick a random number. It could have been top three or top five. Let's go four, five,
Let's go
whatever, however many
four.
you want to highlight.
We're feeling four today. I mean, the top for me, the top highlight was Quincy Wilson from Bullis. So last year at Penn, he had split, I think, 45 flat or something around there in the 4x4 on the anchor leg. This year, there was a lot of excitement and hype for what he was going to be able to do, and he was only focused on the 4x4. In the heats on Saturday morning, he ran 44.37 seconds on the anchor leg of the 4x4. And so, two major pieces of context. One, that's the fastest relay split in Penn Relays history. I think it's like one of the top five all time, high school 4x4 splits. But then on top of that, one of his teammates, I think it was on the first leg, they fell to the track. So he had to run this fast to be able to even get them to qualify to the final. And then eventually Bullis, they finished third place in the final later on that afternoon. And then Quincy Wilson comes back and he splits 44.69. And Bullis had one of their legs fall to the track again. So they just got some unlucky, just some bad luck in terms of, athletes falling to the track. But that just led to some great splits by Quincy Wilson. I mean, I don't know what you thought about Quincy, just seeing those performances this weekend from him.
Quincy Wilson has just become one of those athletes that is sort of just like when you find out that they're competing, you're going to tune in and watch. And that's an exciting part, because, and this is a very interesting point that we've learned over the last couple of years working, with New Balance on New Balance Nationals. It's just like the social media metrics and analytics behind a high school star vastly outperform sometimes some of the top pro athletes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that high school kids just like they can relate so much easier to another high school kid and then to know that this is the best one at the moment. And on top of that, seems to be a generational talent. Like we'll put that out there. Like I do think Quincy Wilson is a generational talent right now. It's so easy to be excited by it. And so it's got to be so hard to manage as well. Like he's only a sophomore and he was kind of put onto our radar and it feels good that we were early on the Quincy Wilson train where we were hyping him up last year and sitting down and doing a bunch of interviews with him. I think it's going to be super cool if this kid makes the Olympic team and not even necessarily just this year, but even thinking down in 2028, that we have like just so many of these little memories over the years of just like seeing that star really take off. And so, I think we have a video from New Balance Indoor Nationals that I don't think has been posted anywhere yet. And I think it's just because it's like a mini documentary of sorts of like the 4x2 at New Balance Indoor Nationals. Maybe we'll release it, I think, closer to New Balance Outdoor Nationals. But in it, Quincy, we mic up the various different coaches and we mic'd up Joe Lee, who's the coach of Bullis Academy. And they lost the 4x2 indoors. And Quincy Wilson is in that clip and he's just like, we're going to win the 4x4 on Sunday and we're going to break the national record. And it's sort of like, even as the coach, you're just like, all right, like we got to calm down, like cool it a little bit. But like, you love seeing that from an athlete like that. It's just sort of like, he loves winning. The effect of just sort of running fast comes, as a result of it. Like, I don't think necessarily Quincy Wilson's lining up in those races and thinking I have to split 44, 0.3 to just, you know, make headlines or anything. He just wants to win for his team. And that's the element of the relays where you have this hero come out of the whole entire story. And so, yeah, Quincy is just, now I'm excited by, like, all right, they lost this weekend. I'm sure it didn't sit well with him because there was this whole sort of approach in the lead up to that race. You know, you mentioned they lost in the finals. I don't think an American high school team has won that in almost years, like 20 years, right?
Yeah,
like
a couple decades already.
And so it's sort of like, how does Quincy Wilson respond from this latest upset? He's going to be running a 400. Is it this weekend or
this weekend in Maryland? He's actually run the 400 and the 4x4. And I think Kingston College and Excelsior are going to be in that 4x4 as well. So they're kind of running it back like next weekend.
All right. So let's hope for everyone being able to stay on their 2 feet. And then, of course, that Quincy Wilson puts on a show again. But yeah, I mean, like, that's going to be that. Instantly makes it must watch. And I think we have many of these moments with Quincy. And, you know, you had the conversation with him afterwards, right? About just sort of like, how real does now the Olympic dream feel? And what did he say?
Yeah. So the way he responded kind of goes to your point of him being so young, but still having so much to go. I mean, he almost sounded like a professional athlete where he was like, you know, I'm taking it day by day. I'm, you know, looking forward. I'm excited. Kind of just like using some of those things. He didn't say definitively like, yes, I'm going to make the Olympic team. I'm like, you know, all this, that, whatever. He was very, very measured, which I like because, again, he's 16 years old. He's running extremely fast, but he has a long career ahead of him. And he has that mindset that's going to help him to keep himself really measured, but still go out there and do his best. And also just even after that race, despite them not winning the 4x4, despite, you know, his teammate falling to the track, he was really running for his team, right? He wanted to make sure that he can keep his team in it. He wanted to make sure that he can do his best so that he wouldn't let his other teammates down. And again, just speaking to the point that he's only 16 years old, but he's, you know, acting as if he's an adult, a professional athlete. So I really, really like, you know, Quincy Wilson's demeanor. I love seeing him run fast all the time. And I think he has a very, very strong shot to make at least like the mixed relay squad for the Olympics, right? I don't think that's far-fetched.
Yeah, I guess that is a good point. Like, I guess everyone's so quick to think 4x4, right? Because let's be real here. And of course, this clip could age terribly in a couple months. But like the open 400 team, like, I don't necessarily think, you know, he's got to run a whole second faster, right?
Yeah, he's in theory, he's faster than some of the other pros have competed at now, right? The times that they've run, but we're still talking about making an Olympic team, right? Like, this isn't
the three rounds is something that he hasn't gone through. I guess like he has run a ton of races at New Balance Nationals.
True. But I mean, I don't think he's ever been like in a professional race with like all on other professionals. He hasn't had, you know, an Olympic trials. He hasn't gone through three high quality rounds like that. I think 4x4 is probably possible. Mixed relay is probably possible. I think he can at least make the final at the Olympic trials, which would put him in the relay pool. And again, he's only 16 years old. We're going to see him possibly be a star at the LA Olympics in 28, you know, the next Olympics in 32. So he has a lot of time. I don't want to rush, you know, his progression in a sense.
You don't want to rush it, but you know that there's this, of course, goes back to sort of like what we were discussing during, or what was being publicly discussed on Twitter and on social media during World Relays or World Indoors, is with the subject of the relays, that the politics behind the relays sometimes, you know, gets in the way of things, where if Quincy Wilson is in the relay pool for the mixed 4x4, NBC is pushing him so hard, right? Like, it's 2016 similarly, like Sydney McLaughlin was like the high schooler that NBC was promoting. And so, you know, watch the story unfold, I think, over the next couple months, because it's going to be really good if it pans out to, you know, to the point that, you know, once he makes like the US Olympic trials final, then it's like, all right, green light, this kid's going to be everywhere.
It's over, yeah. And even just like Sydney, like you said, in 2016, I even remember, I mean, I was super young, but Jordan Hasse, I think, was 2008. Like, she made the 1500 meter final. Like, high school athletes, like, that story is huge. And I love to see it. I love to see those stories kind of develop. And Quincy is a guy right now. Quincy is the guy.
Yeah. All right. What's your second point? Your second favorite moment from Penn Realize this weekend?
So it's kind of hard to pick, but the women's DMR in for the NCAA, we saw Harvard and Providence break the NCAA record, but Harvard getting the NCAA record in the DMR, 10:37:55. They broke the record by what, over 10 seconds. And that record was set all the way back in 1988. So almost 40 years of a DMR record standing. Obviously, you know, Harvard had Mai Ramsden. She anchored in 4:21, which is extremely fast. So, and they also, I got a chance to speak with them after, and they didn't even realize what the record was. They didn't even realize kind of how fast they ran. And they were just like shocked and surprised to be able to, you know, come together and put that race together. So yeah, that was an electric performance on the track. And just also, again, huge shout out to Providence. They ran 10:39:04, which was the second fastest time in history in the DMR. So yeah, both teams, that DMR was absolutely electric for the win.
I don't think Harvard gets enough credit for just like how overall of a strong squad they have aside from just like distance, because it is like Mai Ramsden is the star. Everyone's kind of been watching indoors, but like Harvard's women's DMR didn't even qualify for the NCAA indoor championships. And it was, that race in particular at the indoor championships was so chaotic that like seeing this sort of rematch, like was really cool to have pan out. And I guess like, it wasn't even a rematch because Harvard wasn't even there. But for Providence, you look at someone like Kimberly May, who anchored in 4:23. Like, this was also redemption for the indoor season. And yeah, those two in particular, I mean, both from New Zealand, I think they're building a pretty strong case for the selectors that like, all right, New Zealand women's 1500 squad, there it is.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously we spoke recently about like Ethiopia and Kenya and like how they select. And it's just interesting how different all these other countries' selections are to the USA, where we have to be at Olympic trials. They have to get top three. But yeah, even speaking to the point of indoors, where the Harvard women, they actually said they use that as motivation, knowing that they're going to run the DMR here. They didn't make it indoors. They wanted to make sure they put down a mark. Again, they didn't think that they were going to break it by such a huge amount. But yeah, this really, I think this sets things up very well going forward as we look towards NCAAs, right, and everyone's individual events. And yeah, there's a really, really strong squad that Harvard is putting together that they, I don't know, in a couple of years, they could be like one of the low-key powerhouse squads that's like always sending, you know, some scoring athletes to NCAAs. They have some good names.
It's just, I guess, like the admissions standard is the hardest part. Yeah. With it, right. It's like, all right, we can recruit really well and we have great talent to show for it. Now the challenge is like, you got to make sure your grades are good enough to get
exactly.
All right. What's number three?
So building off that, the men's mile, the NCAA men's mile, this, I mean, I said that the women's DMR was already electric, but this was absolutely insane. Villanova, 15:51:91. Virginia, 15:52:30. Georgetown, 15:52:56. All of them going under the previous NCAA record. This was an absolutely electric race. Villanova getting it at the, like, you know, getting it at the line by, you know, a couple seconds or whatever it is, but they really showed up and showed out. I mean, of course, the times, they broke the NCAA record, three teams under 16 minutes. But then after the race, this is what I was talking about at the top, where Villanova did a lap of the track and the entire stadium was on fire, just cheering for them, loving it. I mean, this was a huge, huge race that I loved. And huge shout out to Georgetown. All four of their legs ran sub four on that 4x mile, which I don't think has ever been done before. And they lost. They came in third place, right? So just speaking to how insane this 4x mile for the men's race was.
Yeah, and it was so interesting to me how long the NCAA record has stood. It was from 2009, 1603. Yeah. I mean, all-star squad there. There was Centrowitz, Andrew Weeding, Shadrach Biwott, and Galen Rupp at the anchor. But that, yeah, it's been a like long stars. Time. And now, finally, we had multiple teams get under for it. Feel for my boy, our boy, I guess, on the podcast here, Gary Martin, because he was in it at the very end, right?
Yeah, Gary was in it, and he was really, really going for it. There was like a moment.
He wanted that last, so bad.
Yeah,
that,
he was
in
like
front of a home
going
crowd.
For it. That would have been the perfect kind of like storybook, you know, ending to the 4x mile. But I mean, again, huge kudos to Virginia for pulling out, you know, 15:52:30, right? That's insane. That is absolutely insane. So to come second place, I think that's, you know, nothing to kind of be disappointed about. But yeah, Villanova, they really pulled things out. A couple of their guys, I think, ran a 4x8, later on that afternoon. So this is a really, really strong squad that put together a great race. Just overall, the top three there.
All right, what was your final highlight from the weekend?
So final one, I can't go without mentioning that men's mile. Yared Nuguse, Ollie Hoare, paced by Jordi Beamish. Yared Nuguse got the win in 3:51.06, and Ollie Hoare just second place in 3:51.28. So they were going for the Olympic standard. Ollie Hoare is coming off of injury, and he just competed at the Australian Championship. So he's really trying to get that standard. One quick fun fact. So Jordi Beamish, he paced the race, but I spoke to Coach Ritz afterwards, and he said that Yared was kind of like a late entry, and Yard was supposed to pace the race for Ollie, but Yard was like, I'd rather run. I'd actually race than pace. So that's kind of interesting dynamic. And I think for Ollie, of course, we know Yard is in amazing form. He's coming off, the world indoor silver. He broke the American record indoors. But Ollie, this race really indicates that he's in some really, really good form, and he's going to be making some noise as we, progress through the spring and the summer. I really like this 3:51 from him. And yeah, I mean, he's kind of like back, getting really back to his form.
I mean, given the nature of his injury, I forget in exactly. It's this. Kyle wrote a whole thing in the newsletter about how he had the same injury, and it sort of after that zapped a lot of his speed. And so, obviously, a couple months back, you think that is a concern for someone like Ollie in an event like the 1500 meters, where like speed has become everything. And to see 351 for the mile, the standard was what, 350.4 or something like
Or
that.
something like that, yeah.
And so he was just right there. Very weird race. I guess like you could tell that Yared was like somewhat of a de facto pacer, and it was nice for him to come away with the win. But at the very end, when he was veering wide and running in lane two the whole time, it was just sort of like, what is happening here? Such a bizarre end to the race, but given the full context of like, no, like this is him trying to pace Ollie to the standard. It was as close as I think you can get without getting under so far. And yeah, to your point, like, we have a podcast episode with Adam Spencer, who won the Australian 1500 at the national championships. We're gonna put that out later this week. And I asked him just sort of like what needs to happen now in order for him to solidify his spot. That Australian 1500 picture is so crowded because you've got, someone like Ollie Hoare, who made the last Olympic final and has run really fast and performed well at the Diamond Leagues, but then, has this injury. Cam Meyer, the teenage sensation. Stewie McSwain, who is, a very prolific 1500 meter runner and also a really strong 5K runner. But then Adam Spencer wins the whole thing. And, so like there's just so many names in it. I think in the end, if you're the Australian selectors, you sit down Stewie McSwain and you tell him, like, hey, like we're going to push you to the 5K. So he was out in China, trying to, he ran so close to that standard.
The standard.
That would have been one way for him to kind of solidify a spot. I think if I'm the Australian selectors, each week I feel like I'm picking another country and then like assuming the role of being a selector for the Olympic team.
All over.
I think you push McSwain to the 5K, and then obviously you go Ollie Hoare for the 1500, assuming he gets the standard, which he's getting inching closer and closer. Adam Spencer, from my conversation with him, is probably not going to chase that fast time until after the NCAA season is over, which I thought was, I think, a little risky because it's like then you only have that month of June to get the standard. He's got, the Big Ten Conference Championships for Wisconsin, where he might run an 800, and then it goes into, regionals, nationals, and he wants to come away with like a national title and maybe the national championship. If you get a couple of the Washington guys as well, you can make that race potentially fast enough to get the Olympic standard. We'll have to just wait and see who else is in the field. But since he is the national champion, I think all he needs to do is, show that he can get the standard. I have to double check. I keep forgetting this. His 3:31 that he ran at the London Diamond League last year might already check the box as like the Olympic standard.
Is it within the time? Like, it does it hit
I
that
know
time
Oslo was
frame?
out of the picture, and then I think for a lot of like someone like Ollie, like Oslo doesn't count. So I don't know. I got it. This is sort of like, hey, if you're listening to this, you can fact check me right on the spot because I don't remember off the top of my head. But if the London Diamond League was within the window, then he already has a standard, but you still need to kind of prove to the selectors that you are in somewhat of that form. So if he's not chasing 334 until, or the Olympic standard until June, he's leaving himself a lot of time for in between, like a lot of guys to run fast. And I guess like his hands are tied a little bit because he's in the NCAA system right now. He can't just like go and veer off and run this Diamond League here or there. Maybe he could, I guess. But yeah, so this is sort of like a thing where once again, like you don't want to be like you, the worst job in the world right now is being the Australian selectors because you've got this headache. Then you've got to choose their women's marathon team, which I think like is an even crazier thing. So in general, I ultimately will predict, given everyone runs well over the coming months, that the Australian 1500 team at the Olympics will be Ollie Hoare, Adam Spencer, and then Cam Meyer. And then you move Stewie McSwain up to the 5K. That is just sort of like my gut instinct where we're at right now in late April. But, you know, again, it'll be based off of like how well everyone else runs. Shout out from this men's mile, Eric Holt battling to the finish line and also running, you know, 351.46. Like he is someone who like just constantly is sticking his nose in it, has come away with some solid victories, you know, on the US domestic racing scene. But this is sort of like where he was on the heels of two of the best milers in the world.
Right there.
So he might take, you know, quite a bit of confidence from that and just sort of in pulling in like results from around the country to tie into the state of the men's 1500 in America. Eric Holt running as fast is a good sign, but at the same time, Cooper Tier just ran 3:32 Sunday night in Virginia.
Yes, I just saw that.
Colin Salmon ran 3:33 at the Brian Clay Invitational and then just lowered his 800 PR this past weekend. And so now all of a sudden, you know, it was mentioned on the Coffee Club podcast that, you know, the NAU guys believe that he's going to be a guy that makes the US 1500 team. Cole Hawker still hasn't run a 1500. Yared, I mean, this is a great showing for him. And he's like the one guy who like you feel really comfortable about his odds. But if you go, all right, Yared and Cole made the 1500 final at the Olympic at the World Championships last year. That's two spots or two really talented guys who could run 331. Cooper Tier is kind of like right in that bubble. Is that your team right there? Or can someone like Eric Holt or a slew of guys, it's just the 1500 at the Olympic trials always, and the US Championship is always a fun event to watch. But this is sort of where we're at right now.
Yeah.
And again, it's late April.
It's late April. It is stacked. It is stacked. I mean, we're always seeing like some crazy 1500 meter, you know, fields coming out at the Olympic trials or, you know, USA's. Matthew Sentritz is kind of like on his, I think he's like closing out his career. So it's like almost a new generation in a sense. I don't know how things are going to play out. I don't know how things are going to play out when we get to the Olympic trials, but I'm excited overall for it. And I do just also want to note that after speaking with Yared after the mile, we know that at Prefontaine, it's going to be him, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, as well as Josh Kerr. He was, of course, super excited for that race. He loves like the hype, and he's like kind of flying under the radar where it's like all about Jakob. It's all about Josh Kerr. So he's like, I love it. Listen, y'all do your thing. Let me come up and surprise everyone. I mean, let's not forget that he almost was really close with Jakob when at Prefontaine last year. So it's not like he could sneak up and win that race there. So overall, yeah, I really like the landscape of the men's 1500 in the US right now, but it's going to be very competitive. For us, it's fun.
I just feel like every single time we've tried fishing from Yared on like, give us something spicy or good to say about Josh or Jakob, he gives you nothing. And so when our comment section on our Instagram post, when we made like the boxing type poster of Jakob versus Josh, and then some people in the comment section was like, yeah, but what about Yared? It was like, if Yared talked a little bit more crap, maybe we would throw him on the front end of the poster instead of giving him, you know, the second slide. So until he does that, we're gonna continue to just, you know, focus on the key, you know, mano a mano matchup that is Josh Kerr versus Jakob Ingebrigtsen. But yeah, full respect to him, he could end up winning that race at the pre-classic. But we've still got, I guess, a couple more Diamond Leagues to get to there's a couple more before pre-classic.
Doha might be coming up. Yeah, there's a couple more between them.
The presenting sponsor of the Sidious Mac podcast is Olipop. You know we've been pounding Olipop for over a year now. 2023 was a track season to remember, and Sidious Mag was able to be there for all of the big moments thanks to the incredible support of Olipop. What has become known as the runner's soda isn't just a great companion for pregame shows or post-race shows, or if you're just watching at home and want to crack a can of Olipop open yourself. It's good for you too. It's a prebiotic soda with 9 grams of fiber, which is 32% of your daily needs, that only has 2 to 5 grams of sugar and helps your digestive health in a way that a threshold workout never could. We love it because there are 15 incredible flavors that will keep your body refreshed and ready to go for the next workout. My current favorite is lemon lime. Caitlin Tui's number one flavor is ginger lemon. There are other great flavors like vintage cola, tropical punch, orange squeeze, cherry vanilla, and I'm hearing rumors of another one coming soon. Sidious Mag podcast listeners get 25% off non-subscription orders by using code Sidious25 at checkout at drinkolipop.com. You can also find Olipop at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Kroger, Target, Walmart, Publix, and most recently, they just got added to Costco, so pro tip there. Next time you're looking for a refreshing and healthy drink after that long run or hard workout, reach for an Olipop. You won't be disappointed. Drinkolipop.com, code Sidious25. Shanghai was this past weekend, and, you know, I felt like, one, I overslept for the first hour, but I caught up on some of the races and watched them afterward. I just felt like we ran back the same meet as before, basically, except this one was a little bit lackluster. Yeah. And I'm just so confused by why all the times were pretty slow, I would say. And so, you know, kind of on the subject of the men's 100, like that, where it was slow at the opener in
G-Men.
In G-Men, like,
yeah.
This time around, it was sort of, we looked at, oh, it was Christian Coleman versus Fred Curley again, and then Akane Simbine ends up winning the race, but no, nothing that was really overly flashing to me. I'm still waiting for the fast times that you told me are going to come this season, Anderson.
Listen, all right, so yes, Akane Simbine, he came out of nowhere. I'll give a huge credit to Akane for, of course, kind of upsetting the field in a sense. He is coming off his South African championship, so he's maybe in like a little bit better form. But I will say that Christian Coleman, I think in the press conference, he noted that, so I think someone asked about like the world record, and he said, there's a couple guys, you know, in this field who could run the world record at some point.
I was like, biggest BS so far. Like,
yeah.
Come on, like, guys, you need to be running in the 9.7s before, yeah, like, you can even say anyone's sniffing it so far.
Exactly, exactly. But I'll say that at least that thought process is giving me hope for my prediction of the American record. At least they're thinking about it. But I mean, I think I agree with you that I want to see some of these like faster times come out, even if it's like 9.9s, right? Some sub-10s. But I do think people are going to start to warm up as the season progresses. Christian Coleman, he did say that, you know, kind of like mission accomplished with his races in China, probably working on like his race plan and strategy and some technical things between getting the chance to compete at these Diamond Leagues. But I don't know. I'm waiting. I am waiting as well. I do think once we get to like Prefontaine, we're going to see some fast times. I think, of course, Olympic trials, we're going to see some fast times. So things will start to come. But I'd be lying if I said that, you know, looking at 10.01, 10.04, 10.11 from Fred Curley, I mean, I want some more. I do want some more. But yeah.
Do you think an element of it, and this is just sort of like thinking in general, like what could be the big factor? I think the meet is so far away. Like, right? Like, these athletes have been out of their routine in a sense for 2 weeks where, yeah, maybe the money is good for you to show up to these races and you come away with a couple grand from however you place at them. But you're not at the same training facility every day. You're probably not, you don't have the same weight room that you're used to eating, like the, you know, the delicacies of China and what is presented to you at these hotels isn't maybe the same thing that you're so dialed into, and you know your spots, you know where you're getting your food every single day. That for 2 weeks, it feels like a long time to be out of your routine. So my hope in that sense is that, yeah, one, like, you don't have to go that far. The whole reason why this whole season, the season starts off this is Wanda pours in so much money into the Diamond League, Chinese company, so title sponsor of the Diamond League. That's why these athletes are there. Yeah. And I, in a sense, like, okay, right now that you check those boxes, let's get back to America, get back to training, and hopefully we start to see some faster times in the next couple races. And so, yeah, that's my whole, thought behind it. It was like, okay, treat that as sort of like the preseason, right? Like it's a very public, high stakes, lucrative preseason.
Diamond League preseason, right?
But now sort of Doha will probably be like the first one where you maybe start to see some better performances. Then again, like at the same time, like I think everyone rises to the level of competition that is around them. It doesn't help that like Trayvon Bermell, Marcel Jacobs, Andre DeGrasse choose not to go out to the Diamond League and in China and stay just in Florida at a high school meet. And they're running 100 in the opposite direction because they flipped the track for them. And even from the video of the cell phone footage that was captured from the stands, that is all we have from this race. Like, it looked like a finish line. No one knew where the finish line was. Because you're not used to running at a place like that. And then, top Adidas athletes, this is more so affecting like the distance stuff, like are in Germany for the Adidas like Road to Records event and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just sort of like, if you want the top guys to come together, the Diamond League so far has not done the job in the first two meets. And I'm hoping like maybe definitely pre-classic is sort of like the first one where you look at the field for the 100 and you're like, this is potentially a US championship, world championship, Olympic final. And so far the quality of these fields has not been that great. Switching gears over here to the women's 200, which is the other big event I think I took away from Shanghai. The question last week was like, are you worried about Sha'Carri Richardson? We both said no, because it's early. This time around finishes third, fourth, whatever it was.
Third place.
Slower time. But I go back to my thing. It's like she went all the way out to China. Like this is, she's been out of her system for 2 weeks. Like maybe that's why, but like not an encouraging performance.
It's not. And I think it goes to like what you were saying, where they traveled to China, they competed at one city, they then traveled to another city. I don't know if the full motivation to perform, like to run whatever we might be expecting, 22 low or something like that, right? I don't know if they have that full motivation, as opposed to just like kind of getting into the groove of things. This is Sha'Carri's second race of the 2024 season. I think the thing is, we're used to seeing her, I think the past 2 years she's competed at Miramar and opened up with like head six or something, wind aided. So we're kind of ingrained in like, oh, she should be running fast. But I think relative to the rest of the field, she finished third place behind Daryl Nita from Great Britain, as well as Zenivia Battle, also from the US. So I don't know. I'll be more interested in her next race back in the United States in, against whoever it may be, whether it's like Gabby Thomas and, some other people. But that is the race that I'll truly be interested in. As opposed to like getting too worried about this performance. I will say though that it's not like, Daryl Nita, I think she made the world championship final. She finished, I think, fifth place at Worlds last year in the 200. Anavia Battle made the Olympic team in 2021. So they are like two kind of strong athletes, but of course, Sha'Carri Richardson, she got the medal last year, bronze medal in the 200. Of course, the gold in the 100. We're definitely keeping an eye out to see what she does. But I think the next race, if maybe she falters, if she doesn't do as well, then I'll start to like raise some serious questions. Like, okay, it's May. It's like, we need to really see what's kind of going on.
If you're NBC or if you're one of these many companies that have kind of thrown your Olympic dollars behind promoting Sha'Carri Richardson, do you slow promotion after if the next one is not that hot?
I mean, they're never going to slow promotion. There's no way. Like, there's a couple athletes that they can't slow promotion on because they are the stars. But I think that's the nature of like our sport in the United States. Again, speaking to other countries, they have a selection process that is more open, more questionable in a sense of like, we don't know how it goes. But in the US, you have top three. It's really strict. You just have to make top three. And I'd be interested to know like how NBC or like other sponsors and other networks like make their decisions on investing in athletes, knowing that an athlete may not make a team, right? It's completely up to them.
I guess the only beauty in it is that with a sprinter in particular, you hedge your bet a little bit because of the relays, right? Like
true.
Allyson Felix, like, yeah, she did end up making like the Olympic team in the open 400, but like the possibility was just sort of like, and I guess like even she vocalized, like the goal was just to qualify, like finish high enough that you can make a relay team. And, you know, whether that is the mixed relay or the 4x4, like that, you're an Olympian and you will be there, so you don't have to worry about it. Distance events, a little bit more, you know, wide open and anything can happen. And so, yeah, I guess thank you for bringing me back to the point, though, of like, in looking at this results, we have to look beyond just the time, right? Like that you brought it to like, all right, but let's look at who Sha'Carri finished behind and who she beat. That is ultimately like the good point where it's, you know, especially when you consider it, this is the Diamond League, like the competition is ultimately what should matter when it's this early on in the season. And I guess like maybe that's the subject of the whole entire Olympic year. It's just like, it's all about who you beat. The times come after the fact. But the hardest part about the Diamond League is that this race should have included, you know, Abby Steiner instead of her going out to Bermuda and running a wind-aided, you know, fast time, I guess, and just taking the win over not as good of competition. And same thing with Noel Lyles. It's sort of like, I kind of, you know, as much as, you know, you view that meet and you love that the effort they're putting into bringing track and field to a place that is very embracing of that culture, it's like, if the top athletes are not showing up, then like, it just feels sometimes like it could be like a public practice of sorts for the top athletes. Like you see Noel Lyles win in a wind-aided 996. One, it's great because as a fan, you're there and you're like, I got to see Noel Lyles race this season. But in the grand scheme of things, when we're unpacking, like, what does this mean and what do we take away from it? I don't know what to take away from that race. And then like, I wish that the wind reading was better, was higher in it, that they would have run, you know, the
faster,
world record.
Right. Yeah. And these are unfortunately a few races that we probably won't remember by the time we get to June, by the time we're in Eugene for the Olympic trials. For the athletes, again, I think for them, they're thinking about, what are the technical things I can work on? It's still April. How can I like build out my race plan? What are some things I can practice to make sure when I do get to these Diamond Leagues, when I do get to Olympic trials, I'm going to be fully ready. And yeah, the times, I think for the most part across the board, whether it's in, you know, Shanghai, whether it's in, you know, Bermuda, I don't think the times are as relevant as the kind of head to heads. That's what's really going to be important. Because if everyone is running slow, then at that point, it's completely irrelevant. It's just, who are you beating? Who are you going to, you know, be able to go up against later? That's what really, really matters. So yeah, we'll see. And these are like, this is the earliest that the Diamond League has ever been. It's never been this early in April or in the season. So yeah, not too many things to worry about, at least from my perspective.
All right. And one quick other race that stood out to me from the Shanghai Diamond League was the women's steeplechase.
Yes.
You know, from an American perspective, like, you know, what gets me about this event is that sort of like at the front end of it, like it feels like it's Beatrice Chepkowich or, you know, a couple other people who just dominate. And then it's just like a really fast time, either under nine or really close to under. This time around was 1:09.07. And the American intrigue in this one was Emma Coburn running her first race since last August. And unfortunately had to drop out. I mean, she's been cross training like an animal, and it's been so commendable to see, you know, these videos of her on the bike for like hours at a time and multitasking and doing all this stuff to just get back to full health. And it showed, like, when a season starts off with like a DNF, like it was a little worrying, but then she did go on Twitter and she said, dang it, tweaked my ankle on a water jump with 1K to go, had to drop out. I'll be okay. Just a disappointing return to racing after ending last season with my hamstring injury. Very, very happy for my teammate, Gabby Jennings, for her new PR, 9:19 in fifth place. So that was a big, you know, a nice takeaway from it, was that Gabby Jennings, like, who has been kind of sort of on the bubble in the women's steeple over the last couple of years, finally puts together like a really good performance against some really strong competition, that now she is sort of like on the radar to make the Olympic team. Where the trials are just so soul crushing and heartbreaking. I still think of just sort of like the Leah Fallon fall at the last trials, and that third spot for many years has been so up for grabs with Coburn and Frerichs taking like 1-2, but now I feel like three spots are just wide open. Olivia Marquezic starting off the season, it wasn't as strong of a performance as I would have hoped. Where my big bold declaration on the podcast a couple months back was that, and even on Twitter, that's like she's going to win the U.S. Olympic trials. Chrissy Gear hasn't run it, so it's like that event in particular, tons of intrigue. And again, May will be a time where sort of like, does the picture become clear as to who our team is going to be?
Yeah, I think this is a similar situation where we'll have to see where, when May starts to unfold, what are things going to look like? You know, again, Emma Coburn, Courtney Fredericks, they essentially dominated for however long, right? The past decade or so. Mm-hmm. And both of them, they've dealt with injuries. Courtney Fredericks, I don't think she's opened up for, she might have run indoors, I think one or two races indoors. But it's just opening up the field almost to like a generation shift where there's a couple other women who are going to be really stepping up and seeing the opportunity to make the team and can really, really change things. So this is very much one of the most exciting events to look forward to, at least from a fan's perspective on like who's going to make the team, who are we looking out for as we go into the Olympic trials. And I really want to even highlight that Fredericks and Emma Coburn, they both have global medals. So mm-hmm. it's like we can move into another generation and they can kind of use that as motivation to say, we can also be, you know, competitive with the rest of the world. It doesn't have to be like a complete drop off for the United States just because, you know, Emma Coburn is injured or, you know, Fredericks may not be at the best that she used to be. And also let me clarify that, like, I'm not saying that Emma Coburn is like done or anything like that, right? I still think that there's a lot of potential there. She's talking about, she just tweaked something in the middle of the race, right? So there's still opportunity to really see Emma Coburn come back as well as, you know, some others really get back into the fold. But this is an exciting, you know, steeplechase that we kind of look out for.
Yeah, I guess like in the grand scheme of things too, the steeplechase is just so much better when Emma Coburn and Courtney Fredericks are like in the mix for the win at like these events. And the fact that that's not the case right now just kind of has made the event feel a little bit lackluster, because the fast times, like they just in the steeple don't really do it for me. Yeah. So I want to see really good competitions with Americans in the mix. But and of course, that's just our patriotic bias here. It's like, I mean, we want America to be good in the event.
Listen, if some Americans can start to drop some 855s or something like that, like that would be amazing. One day we'll get to that point. The world may be running 840 flat at that point, but like we're you know, we'll see it. We'll see it one day.
We'll get there. Velus is the active recovery footwear brand that is designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. They are launching two new styles to their recovery mix for spring 2024, the Active Slide and the Active Flip Collection. These active recovery sandals are super lightweight and equipped with Velus's three-part tri-motion technology. They cradle your heel with impact-absorbing foam that cushions your feet with every step. It's got amazing arch support and forefoot flex that allows your fatigued feet and toes to stretch and relax. Velus is focused on helping athletes recover faster before and after you train so you can get after your next run performing at your best. Run, recover, repeat with Velus. Enjoy a 20% discount by entering code SidiousMag20 at checkout at velusfootwear.com. All right, final thing I wanted to close out with, and this is just sort of like the big, aside from pouring over results and all that stuff, the big news of last week was, it came, I think, you know, shortly after we recorded our last episode. Alexis Ohanian, who is the Reddit co-founder, the husband to Serena Williams, announced that he is going to launch the 776 Invitational, which is going to be a women's only track meet that will take place in September. Gabby Thomas was part of the announcement as one of the first public partners of the meet. He did, you know, say on Twitter afterwards that, you know, there are more athletes who are involved. And from my sort of just discussions with people behind the scenes. Like I've gotten to learn of some of the names, and we'll learn more in over the course of the next couple months. So what exactly is the 776 Invitational going to be? It's women's only. The prize purse is going to be bigger than a Diamond League. The winner will take home $60,000, second place $25,000, $10,000 for third place, whereas right now the Diamond League structure is $10,000 to first place, $6,500 or something like that for second place, like $3,000 for third.
Something like that.
There was a clip, I think, somewhere on the internet where they had Kenny Bednarik and Tara Woodhall Davis on stage, and they were asking just sort of like, oh, well, the Olympics is now paying, you know, the gold medal winners. What do you make of it? And, you know, Tara and Kenny talked about how, like, yeah, sometimes you go to these meets all around the world and you don't even break even from it. You lose money, and track ends up being like a very expensive sport. So it's nice to see someone who has a lot of money pouring some of those financial resources to showcasing and amplifying track and field. If there aren't a ton of details out yet about the 776 Invitational, they just said that they're going to, quote, challenge the convention of current day track events with, and really leaned on the broadcast. What we know about the broadcast sort of in a way is that I highly doubt it's going to be behind a paywall, because Gabby Thomas being involved just a couple days after she was publicly asked about just like what could the powers that be in track and field do to really help amplify the stars. She, her first thought was just sort of like, she's not a fan of the Diamond League moving over to Flow Sports and being behind a paywall for $30 a month, because now no one's going to be able to watch them race. Like if you're a casual fan, the chances of just a casual track and field fan coughing up $30 a month seems very low. And so that was, you know, in my thinking, I don't know what the broadcast is, where it's going to be or what it's going to look like. I would think maybe it's going to be an all women's broadcast team, which would be really cool to see for this particular event. In the Washington Post, Ohanian said he envisions a party atmosphere with an infield crowd of the fans, musical act, entertainment, bringing the energy of almost like Coachella to track. And so a lot of this is super interesting because it comes, you know, after, you know, the news of the Michael Johnson League taking shape and how he's raised $30 million for that venture. Like that, we're going to learn more about that in the coming weeks and months. And with this, this is another thing that will fit nicely, like I think on the calendar, where if it's in September, it comes after the Diamond League season potentially ends, or the, you know, 2025, if this is going to be repeated, it comes after the World Championships, the Olympics. So I like the early seeds of this event and what it could potentially be. Now, there's not a lot of people who are happy online, because one thing that was, you know, made public is that there will not be any field events. And I'm okay with that. Like, I will publicly say, I think it's fine that there's no field events for this meet. Because one of the biggest things in this sport is this feeling that everyone, it needs to be fair for everybody. And I think let this thing, give it a shot before. And then, you know, because if it is successful, you can expand upon it to other places. So, you know, we don't even know like what the longest distance is going to be contested at the thing. And I think when they said, oh, they even said like they're aiming for like a 3-hour window for the broadcast. Yeah, sure. That, like, that's a lot of time to fill. But I think if you're thinking of a product that is going to be for, you know, the broadcast, and then you might, you can fill a lot of that time with supplementary storytelling. Like right now, when an athlete steps onto the track, you only get the announcers reading off their PRs. You don't know anything about like the, their season progression or what is happening behind the scenes. If you send a camera crew to follow Sha'Carri Richardson or Gabby Thomas or whoever it is and chronicle a little bit of that backstory, you can include that in the broadcast. And so I think that's how you fill the 3-hour broadcast time. But you know, there's just sort of like everyone crying about like, oh, we don't have, you know, the discus or the hammer throw or the shot
Yeah.
put like for this thing. I was like, give this thing a chance, like, and let's get the product out there first. Also attacking Alexis Ohanian on Twitter or on Instagram, like, don't scare him off for
Yeah.
investing in track and field.
Let's not like let the people who have the money and who have the interest like not even want to try this anymore,
Yeah,
right?
it's like, what did I get myself into? Like, now everyone's like really mad at me for something that I thought was going to be really well received. And so I'm all for, you know, his efforts, especially because, you know, the product is focused on women's track and field, which I think like is much more marketable right now and a much better product than the men's side of things.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to give this a chance and I'm excited to see where it goes. Anderson, what were your
Yeah.
big takeaways from it?
Yeah, that was just the biggest thing for me. Just the opportunity for women to have kind of their own spotlight, their own meet where they can really showcase their talents. I was doing a little bit of history, and it's just like, I don't think people realize how recent women's athletics in, I guess specifically in track and field, but athletics overall, how recent, you know, they've had the opportunity to compete. Where we were just talking about Emma Coburn and the steeplechase. The steeplechase only got added to the Olympics in, I think, 2008 in Beijing. So having, like, you know, people come in and really invest in, you know, women's track and field, I think is going to be a big, just a big plus for the sport. And of course, the prize money, really, I guess there's almost like competition in a sense of like, hey, Diamond League, like we got this money, we're paying things out. What are you going to do? Right.
I
So
think, yeah, the rising tide lifts all boats. And so you're gonna, I mean, this is one element of it. Like, we still have no idea what more details are from the Michael Johnson League and what
Michael
might
Johnson, we got
be
to see.
offered up there. But when they raise $30 million, you can assume that maybe it's gonna be super lucrative. Yeah, it's, I mean, like, this is very interesting, and I can't wait to learn more. And you know, I did shoot a DM to Alexis Ohanian because he follows Sidious Mac. And I said, hey, congrats on like you know, the venture, super exciting stuff. And he did say that, you know, Sidious Mac has been a big reason how he's been able to follow track and field over the past year. Because his research did start, I think, in like January 2023. He did put out a tweet saying, like, who are the top track and field female athletes at in college? And we shot over like a list to them. And I think I even added, like, if you want to learn more and follow along, like, we cover these athletes all the time. And he followed along and he seems to enjoy the content. So, Alexis Ohanian is an open invitation to come on the podcast and we can talk all about this and the decision to invest in women's track and field. So, stay tuned and see if we make it happen.
He has to pull up. No, this is good. I really like it. And I like the opportunity for, again, just the women to be able to compete. I will say I am a little split. So I am like excited to see, you know, all the track events. I guess my initial reaction, just like when I was seeing conversations, was like, so I remember like last year we had Tara Davis Woodhull and Quanisha Burks kind of going back and forth. I do feel like something like that with maybe the long jump could be incorporated. And I don't want to, I guess it kind of sucks to see field events kind of get pushed to the back burner between whether it's this league. Obviously, we don't know details of Michael Johnson's league, but you know, if we want to be able to highlight our sport as a whole, maybe we need someone to come in and like do a field event specific thing, as that would allow fans of just a field event to be able to of field events to be able to get some enjoyment there. But I am on the boat of like, let's see what this is like. And this is not even like a full-blown league, right? This is just a meet. So we can have the opportunity to see what this meet is like, see what it's like next year, right? And then continue to go as opposed to consistently just bashing things. So yeah, we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was This Week in Track and Field. I've been Chris Chavez, Anderson Emerald. We'll be keeping you updated on everything else that we learn from, you know, more results to pore over next week. I think we got
There's a
World
lot.
Relays. You're going.
Oh yes, I'll be in World Relay. So stay tuned for some stuff coming from there for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.